Chris Ward from University of Wisconsin-Madison.
This doesn't have to be very high. It can just be, you know, like that.
Calls about X-rays from magnetosphere.
Hello, everyone. My name is Chris Ward at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. I work with Rich Challington, and we study scientific magnetospheres and massive stars. And today I'll be talking about X-ray emission from the scientific mass. And first thing, we're going to talk a little bit about what scientific magnetosphere is. And essentially, there's a struggle in magnetic massive stars between the wind of the star, which wants to flow out into space, and the magnetic field, which basically wants to stay in place. It doesn't want to be bothered to change its shape to accommodate the wind coming from the star. So we can quantify this struggle as if instead and developed a parameter called wind magnetic confinement parameter, or ASTAR. And this basically proposed is the magnetic energy density divided by the wind energy density. And we get magnetic confinement when ASTAR is greater than 1. That is, the magnetic energy dominates the wind energy. And when that happens, you get combined plasma in a magnetosphere that's forced to co-rotate with the star. And within this magnetosphere, there's basically two different scale lengths for the magnetosphere. One of them is the Kepler radius, which is basically the scale length for the gravitational force. And the other scale length is the outbound radius, basically the length of magnetic confinement within the magnetosphere. And the interplay between the two scale lengths basically gives you different kinds of magnetosphere. A dynamical magnetosphere and centrifugal magnetosphere. So what I think about it is that the Kepler radius is basically the boundary that determines whether the plasma wants to fall back to its star or whether it wants to flow out away from the star because of the centrifugal force. And the outbound radius basically determines whether the plasma is stuck in the magnetosphere or is free to flow out away from the magnetosphere. And we get centrifugal magnetospheres when we have an outbound radius that's larger than the Kepler radius. Because in that area of the magnetosphere, the plasma wants to flow out away from the star because it's beyond the Kepler radius due to the centrifugal force. But the problem is it's still within the confinement of the magnetosphere, still inside the outbound radius. So it's just stuck out in space. And we call it centrifugal magnetosphere, it's centrifugally deployed disk. Now, for the plasma inside the Kepler radius, the gravitational force is actually greater than centrifugal force outwards, so it tends to clump together and fall back to the star in mass. So it's always moving, it's always dynamical, so that's what we call a dynamical magnetosphere. So when we consider many massive stars, we can separate them into regions of dynamical magnetosphere and centrifugal magnetosphere. And this particular plot is a distribution of magnetic massive stars, and the colors are X-ray emission from these stars. And so for the, at the time of the paper, we have information, X-ray information for these stars, and it turns out that many centrifugal magnetospheres have enhanced X-ray emission. And when I say enhanced X-ray emission, I mean relative to a normal star that doesn't have these magnetic fields. And it turns out that the extra X-rays are actually caused by magnetically confined wind shock. Essentially, plasma from the wind travels out from the footprint along the field line and it collides with each other because they're closed field loops. So this collision produces shocks that produce X-ray. So we get extra X-rays from centrifugal magnetosphere. And so we want to be able to understand the dynamics of magnetosphere, specifically what causes the wind shocks, how the wind shock produces X-ray. And typically we will use manual hydrodynamics because we have a magnetic field and we have hydrodynamic flow. But the problem is centrifugal magnetosphere typically have very large magnetic field, typically in the order of a kilogauss or 10 kilogauss. And that is very bad for MHD because these very large magnetic fields have very high wave speeds, outbound wave speeds. And basically, in order to stimulate these, we have to have very, very, very small time step in order to accurately capture the outbound wave. and this makes stimulating dendritic meninges very prohibitive, computationally expensive. And so this, what he did in 2007 was to develop a rigid field hydrodynamic approximation for stimulating dendritic meninges. And basically what this is an approximation. You approximate the 3D magnetic field as many quasi one-dimensional field lines through flex tubes. And so quasi 1D basically means that the flex tubes have varying cross-sectional area that is inversely proportional to the magnetic field magnitude. And so we stimulate these individual field lines, hydrodynamic flows, and these hydrodynamic flows are subject to external sources of momentum and energy. There is radiation, radiative acceleration from the star, and also gravity and centrifugal acceleration from the rotation. And we also implement radiative cooling inverse Compton scattering cooling. We also have thermal conduction within the cores, but the results in this paper, we do not have thermal conduction yet. So we have run the simulation, but that's in a different talk, basically. The idea behind RFHD is breaking up many spheres, many different individual field lines. So this is a typical field line of a centrifugally deployed distance beyond the coupler radius. Essentially, we have the wind is being driven from the footprint. It shocks. We have two shocks domestically on either side of the disk. And then we have a layer of region of hot gas that's basically is cooling, once to cool, and then that is actually what generates the X-ray. And then at the center, you have plasma in a centrifugally deployed disk because it's stuck there, it's being deployed by the centrifugal rotation. And we have many of these field lines per magnetosphere. So we take these individual one-dimensional simulations and we basically stitch them together to create a magnetosphere. And right here you can see the centrifugally deployed disk of the magnetosphere. Right at this point is right about where the coupler radius is. We have a centrifugally deployed disk beyond the coupler radius, and we have a dynamical magnetosphere here. And so our goal is we want to understand the effects of stellar properties, namely the rotation rate and the mass loss rate, and the resulting X-rays from the centrifugal magnetosphere. And it is important because the previous study done by Nick Hill and Ms. Townsend showing that varying the mass loss rate actually has a very large effect on the level of X-ray emission that we get from these magnetospheres. Also, it is really, really hard to observe mass loss rates from the stars because of the magnetic field. The magnetic field basically makes it trap the plasma in the magnetosphere, so you don't get a very good accurate determination of how large or how small the mass loss rate is. So we want to find a relationship between rotation rate, mass loss rate, and X-ray luminosity because we can more easily observe X-ray luminosity and rotation rate. So we can try to get an independent diagnostic of mass loss rates from these massive stars. And the way that we do that is we simulate a Sigma Orion E-like star, Sigma Orion E being the archetype for the centrifugal magnetosphere, and we use parameters from MOIST. And we have 42 different combinations of parameters, 7 mass loss rates, 6 rotation rates. So 42 different magnetospheres to try to suss out this relationship, this interplay between stellar rotation rates, and mass loss rate, and X-ray luminosity. And if you notice here, we have rotation rate of 0. This is technically not a centrifugal magnetosphere, but the reason why we include that is because we have a secondary goal of comparing our X-ray results with the XADM model developed by Asif and Stan and others. Asif has a poster right there. And so we want to compare our X-ray luminosity results with the XADM model. And we also want to test the concept of shock retreat developed in the same paper. The idea of shock retreat is basically that if you have a high mass loss rate coming from the star along the field line, you have more density in the magnetosphere, it cools faster, so you have a smaller cooling length, the shock much closer to the disk, further along the beer line. So you have more acceleration along the beer line, the higher shock velocity, higher temperature, more X-rays, stronger and harder X-rays. And so here's our initial results for our grid of parameters. So this is a plot of X-ray luminosity and mass loss rate, and these different symbols and colors represent the different rotation rates. And what we find is our results generally agreeing with the XADM model, which is the dashed line. And I believe in the SADM paper they reported they compared it to their own MHD simulation, and they found that the MHD X-ray luminosity was about 20% of the XADM model. And when we apply the same kind of comparison to our rigid field hydrodynamic simulation, we get between 20% of the XADM model and closer to 100% of the XADM model up here. And also, we apparently have a nine-minor titanation. And what I mean by that is that increasing the rotation rate does not necessarily lead to more X-rays for any given mass loss rate. And I'll go back to that in a moment. But first, we have to understand what is mass loss rate, failing in that, what does it do to the X-ray luminosity and the dynamics of the magnetosphere. The first and most obvious result is that increasing mass loss rate increases the density of the line. But the more subtle result is that increasing the mass loss rate does not necessarily shrink the shock region. And so what I did here was basically measure from one shock to the next and give you the size of the shock region. And these shock points are always moving throughout the simulation, so you have to take a time average. And what's supposed to happen, at least according to the shock retreat model, is that if you have a higher mass loss rate, you should have smaller coil lengths, basically smaller shock region. But we don't necessarily have the result happen. Yes, you get larger shock regions up through here. They're smaller here and smaller here, but it gets larger through here, so it's kind of inconsistent result. And we think that this might have to do with rotation, because right now the XADM, the model did not include rotation, so there might be a possible rotation effect that's causing the inconsistency with shock, the different shock cooling lengths. And also, rotation rate increases, we're getting results, kind of getting the result that the shock region shrunk. I say kind of because this line here, the green line, is the smallest shock region, so the smallest rotation rate. But then the next level of rotation rate is actually the largest, and then it shrinks again. So again, we're sort of getting this inconsistency of our results with relation to the size of the shock retreat. And again, now we have also think about the 9-minute tendency of the results. We believe that this is because of something called steady adiabatic flow. So typically the idea is lines beyond the coupler radius will have centrifugally supporting material. Lines before the coupler radius have a clumping of material falling back to the footprint. But we're also finding a third different kind of one, which is basically steady flow. And what I mean by steady flow is essentially you have a flow from one footprint to the next, and you only have one shot at the footprint. It's more clearly seen with the velocity comparison. You have a flow all the way to the footprint, so one wing footprint gets driven, and we were supposed that both footprints get driven, and they collide, forming centrifugal drifts, but we're actually seeing steady flow all the way to the footprint, and that's where the shock occurs. So instead of having this region of X-ray emission, we're actually getting X-rays from this shock, the very weak X-rays, about 0.1 keV, millions of grams Kelvin. And the question is, are these steady flows physical, or are they just a numerical solution to our quasi-one-dimensional equation? And they may be similar to what's called siphon flows in the sun, where you have a closed field loop in the solar corona, You have a slight pressure difference between footprints, and you got this A-body flow. Stub sign is accelerating into a super sign flow within the corona loop. And the effect of having these steady flows actually changes the capillaries slightly. So the centrifugally deployed disk material actually starts to appear after the capillaries, at about 1.3, 1.4, the capillaries, instead of much closer to the capillaries. And this does have an effect on the amount of X-rays that we get from these manosphere, because these steady flows, they have about 2 to 3 orders of magnitude less LX than the centrifugally deployed disk. So essentially, you're replacing this with this, and that lowers the amount of X-ray luminosity that you get from the manosphere. So in conclusion, our simulation generally agrees with the XADM model, but there is a slight difference in also in mind tangency, perhaps caused by the initial condition, perhaps caused by seven flow, and our plan to basically calculate steady state initial condition so that we can see if the seven flow still appear or not. But overall, this is a promising avenue for mass loss dynamics in conjunction with XADM. Thank you. This one?
Yes.
Yeah, why is this part?
I mean, because I also see those cyclone flows in IMHC simulations. So the question that I have is, what is the largest L value?
Is that a good question?
What is the largest L value?
What is the largest L value?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, it's a normalized distance along the line. The value, the extent of the line is about 11 stellar radii away from this, but this phase here is about, it's closer to the coupler radius. It's a little bit beyond the coupler radius, so it's about 2.5 stellar radii.
But you
Well, we have finished this session early, so let's give an extra big thank you to all the speakers.